of the book of Joshua. We'll pick up there in just a few moments in our study of the book of Joshua. Now, remember if you will, on Sunday, we talked about how that they started out taking one city at a time. Then we talked about how that Gibeon deceived them. And then the king of Jerusalem joined in with four other kings to come against Gibeon as well as against Israel. After that battle, we pretty much conclude the southern part of the land of Canaan taken. Now, if you go back to chapter 13, now let's go back, if you will, to chapter 11. And look at it there. Because when you begin chapter 11, you're kind of making a transition from the southern part of the land of Canaan to the northern part of the land of Canaan. So after these battles with these five kings, remember that's the five kings that when they saw they were losing the battle, hid in the cave. And of course they put a stone above, watched them, kept them there, came back, and took them out of the cave, put them to death. And that kind of brings a close to the conquest of the southern part. And remember, if you will, when we started the study, we said that's the way it was going to go. That Joshua was going to take the southern part of the land of Canaan first, and the northern part in the second conquest. So there's two divisions there, the southern part and the northern part. So notice, if you will, when you start chapter 13, which we looked at on Sunday morning, and that series goes all the way through chapter 24, or the end of the chapter, and it really builds, each chapter just builds upon the fact that God is blessing the Israelites, and that you can really see God assisting them, helping them, blessing them, and you're seeing really God's faithfulness to complete and do what He promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, beginning back in Genesis chapter 12. Then if you notice, you start into chapter 14. And that is the section that they kind of review what has taken place on the other side of the Jordan, over on the plains of Moab, where they situated right before they crossed the Jordan. It was at that point that Reuben and Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh talked to Moses before his death, said they wanted their inheritance on that side of the Jordan. Moses said, yes, you can do that, but you've got to go in and fight for your brothers and sisters that are crossing the Jordan to take Canaan. Then after you do that, you can come back and live with your family on that area. So chapter 14 kind of talks about some of that. But then notice, if you will, it brings up Caleb. And we talked about this too on Sunday morning. Remember, it was in this particular chapter that Caleb goes to Joshua and talks about the fact that 45 years ago, Moses promised him a certain location. And that location was determined by the fact that he went in as a spy, brought back a faithful report to the children of Israel, though they denied it. And he was promised that section that his feet covered when he was spying that land out. He goes to Joshua and says, "You remember that?" And Joshua, of course, said, "Yes." And he said, "That's my mountain right there. And I'm 80 years old, but I'm ready to take my mountain." And that kind of begins the conquest into the northern section of the land of Canaan. And he settled in a section called Hebron. Now, take into consideration, we said, look at your map. And you can follow on both of those maps each piece of ground that they took. The section on the west side of Jordan that Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh took. Then that on the other side, you can just follow them city by city as they began to take city after city after city. Now notice, if you will, you begin in chapter 15. And it says, "This then was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah." Now notice, if you will, you'll notice that in each location, you'll see where they draw straws and they are assigned a section. And Judah, you see on the first page of the map, you see where Judah gets assigned that particular section of Canaan. And it gives the borders of their territory. And then notice, if you will, in verse 13 through 16, it talks about Caleb joining hands with some kinspeople and helps them to take a location. And he says, "Whoever takes that location can have one of my daughters to wife." And of course, it was Othniel in verse 17, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Asha, his daughter, to wife. And of course, then you just go the rest of the chapter, and it gives you a rundown of all the different descendants of Judah. Now, as we pick up and we start in chapter 16 and following, we're going to take it rather quickly until we get to a couple of chapters that we really want to pay some close attention to, because so much of this, if you watch your map, you can see where it's going and kind of see the borders. Chapter 16 deals with the lot of the children of Joseph, fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho on the east to the wilderness that goeth up by Jericho throughout Mount Bethel, and goeth out from Bethel to Luz, and passeth along unto the borders of Archii to Atharoth. You see why we're going to move fast? If you look on your map, you can see, okay, this is the tribe of Manasseh. This is the tribe of Ephraim. And what you'll have in chapter 16 is the exact details of their borders. In other words, it'll be, here's where they're located. This is their territory. And it was given to them. Chapter 16 and 17 deal with that. For example, 17 deals, this was the lot for the tribe of Manasseh. And then remember verse 3 of chapter 17. Back when we were out there with Moses, and when Zelophehad, the son of Hephar, the son of Gilead, the son of Machar, the son of Manasseh, had no sons but daughters. You remember when we were studying that? And the daughters reminded Moses, what's going to happen when we get over there? We're not sons. We have no brothers. Are we not going to get an inheritance? And of course, Moses told her, yes, you're going to get an inheritance. But there are some stipulations. You've got to marry among your tribe. And if you marry among your tribe, then you'll inherit your father's inheritance. That's what happens here in chapter 17. And it talks about Ephraim and Manasseh. Then notice, as you get into chapter 18, it says the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh. What is it talking about, or who is it talking about, when it says the whole congregation of Israel? Absolutely. It's talking about everyone from the 12 tribes, including the Levites. Everybody is gathered together where?
Shiloh.
Now notice what it says. They were assembled together at Shiloh, set up the tabernacle of the congregation there, and the land was subdued before them. Now what does that tell us about Shiloh?
They conquered Shiloh,
but what was Shiloh going to signify?
They set up the tabernacle there.
Absolutely. It was going to be their place of worship. Remember, this tabernacle had been moving through the wilderness for 40 years. Remember, we had the instructions as how to move it. Well, now they conquered Shiloh. They set up the tabernacle. It was now going to be a permanent structure. Now, in a few chapters, we're going to see where there is a terrible misunderstanding with the tribes in Canaan, as opposed to those 2.5 tribes that stayed on the other side of Jordan. And what's going to happen is that those 2.5 tribes are going to build them an altar. And the rest of these tribes are going to get upset, and they're going down to talk to Reuben and Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh and accuse them of being unfaithful, transgressing God's law, and just really raking them up and down the coal as to what could happen because of their unfaithfulness. Now let's hold that. Shiloh is going to be the place of worship for the tabernacle of God and for the people of Israel. Now notice if it says this. But, in verse 7, the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance, and Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh have received their inheritance beyond Jordan on the east, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them. The men arose, went away, and Joshua charged them that went to describe the land, saying, go and walk through the land. Describe it and come again to me that I may here cast lots for you before the Lord and Shiloh. So the men leave, they walk over, they come back, and they began the process of drawing lots. Look at verse 11. The lot of the tribe of the children of Benjamin came up according to their families. Look at chapter 19. Second lot came forth to Simeon, even for the tribe of the children of Simeon. Verse 10. Third lot, Zebulun. Fourth lot, in verse 17, Issachar. Verse 24, fifth lot, Asher. 32, sixth lot, Naphtali. 40, seventh lot, Dan. Then you get into 20. Now remember, Reuben's already got theirs. Gad's already got theirs. Half tribe of Manasseh's already got theirs. Now look at 20. The Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, appoint out for you cities of refuge, wherefore I spake unto you by the hand of Moses. What was the cities of refuge?
That was where people who, I guess, accidentally killed somebody that didn't mean to, could go to where they would be safe until their hearing.
Okay. Pardon? It was about six or eight cities. It was cities on both sides of the Jordan. That was referred to as cities of refuge. I guess the closest thing we could compare it to today would be courthouses. And if you got in trouble with the law, and if you kill somebody, you could rest assured if you could get to a city of refuge, you could get a fair, honest hearing. So these cities were set up for the protection purpose of someone that needed some representation, some fair representation. So here we go. The tribes have been assigned. Cities of refuge have been assigned. And notice in verse 2 it says of chapter 20, appoint out for you cities of refuge, wherefore I spake unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that killeth any person unaware and unwillingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of the blood. When he that doth flee unto one of those cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, and shall declare his case in the ears of the elders of that city, they shall take him into the city and to him give him a place that he may dwell among them. If the avenger of blood pursue after him, then they shall not deliver the slayer up to his hand, because he smote his neighbor unwittingly and hated him not aforetime. Now notice, if you will, verses 7 through 9 stipulate the cities. They appointed Kadesh in Galilee, Shechem, Hebron, Bezar, Ramoth, and then it goes on to say in verse 9, these were the cities appointed for all the children of Israel, for the stranger that sojourneth among them, that whosoever killeth any person unawares might flee and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood until he stood before the congregation. Now, if you begin to look at chapter 21, cities of refuge have been set. The tribes have been dispersed out. Everybody knows where they're going to be, where their location is. Joshua is basically going to take a look backward. And he's going to take these people all the way back and give them a history lesson, beginning back in Genesis chapter 12. Notice what it does. Then came near the heads of the fathers of the Levites unto Eleazar the priest, and unto Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the fathers of the tribes of Israel, and they spake unto them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses to give us cities to dwell in, with the suburbs thereof. Here's the only thing that's lacking before this history lesson comes. Cities of refuge has been now the cities that the Levites, remember, they're not going to get a block of land like the other tribes, but they're getting some cities. And so they're coming before Joshua at Shiloh to get the appointed cities for them. Now notice, if you will, once Joshua gives them this history lesson, telling them everything that God has done for them. Here's the verse that we talked about weeks ago. Verses 43, 44, and 45. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about, according to all that he sware unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. There fell not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. Now, if you go back and you follow through, beginning in chapters 14 and following, you've got it rounded right down to detail. Here's where Reuben, Gad, Manasseh, the rest of them gets it on the other side. The cities of refuge are laid out. The cities for the Levitical priest, they're assigned. And Joshua concludes at the end of chapter 21, okay, this is everything. This is everything that Jehovah God promised to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now remember, if you will, as we have said several times, what is so simple, plain and clear to you, is very cloudy to people that have been brought up from a denominational background. And remember, if you will, we said there were two things that clouded the people's vision. If we're going to be successful reaching people and convincing them that New Testament Christianity is the way to go, you've got to first help them to see that there is a thing called New Testament Christianity. That one can practice New Testament Christianity and not be a part of any denominational group. Sitting at the center the other night, we were over listening a couple of ladies speaking behind us, and they had moved from one congregation to another in town, and the lady says, My husband wanted to worship in a non-denominational group. In other words, that didn't have a denominational name on top of it. And she said, that's okay with me. All I care is that the preacher preaches the Bible. assume from that congregation, if she sees anybody reading this, that's the Bible. And it's okay. But here's the problem. Just because they wear a non-denominational name doesn't make them non-denominational, though they say they are. Nope. Because you see, their principle is built on two theories. Calvinism, once saved, always saved. Where does that cause problems? It's faith only, once saved, always saved. So when you're reading a verse about baptism, and Jesus said, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned." Does that give you any problems? Not a bit, does it? But it does them. Because you see, they've got to read that out. Because if they accept what the Lord said, it denies their background. Their religious theology is thrown out the window. So they then have to say, okay, if the Bible teaches this, then I'm going to give up my man-made theology and I'm going to just be a New Testament Christian. Another basic principle that throws the whole Bible out of kilter, beginning in Genesis and ending in Revelation, is premillennialism. And that basically means that one day out there in the future, Christ is coming back to this earth and He's going to set up His earthly kingdom from the city of Jerusalem and He's going to reign there for 1,000 years.
I had a hard time with that long after I got into church.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, how does that throw everything else off? It throws everything about the kingdom and the church off. That's why this section right here is so critical. Because you see, it's not uncommon for people to say, well, we've got to take care of the Jews because Christ is coming back and they've got to get their land promise. In Jerusalem, they don't have their land promise. Well, yes, they got it. And we're going to read Sunday morning the stipulations from it. And before Joshua dies, he's going to lay down the law to them and tell them exactly what they're going to have to do to keep that land. And if they don't do it, they're going to lose that land. But you see, once again, what's clear to you is very cloudy, is it not, Billy?
Mm-hmm.
From someone that comes from a denominational background that's heard this over and over and over again.
That's why I was fixing to say, it's not that it's hard to believe, but when you've been taught that from a kid,
yes,
all the way up, it's,
yes,
the same old stuff.
Absolutely. So, you know, you see why here, and that will give people problems, and they'll just be wringing their hands thinking, That can't be right. They couldn't have gotten it because he's coming back.